It's Anti-Poverty Week, when the spotlight falls on the millions of Australians still living below the breadline, despite 27 years of uninterrupted economic growth. But there's still much debate over whether Australia is becoming a more unequal country as a result. In August, the Productivity Commission poured cold water on the perception that Australia suffered from rising levels of inequality. Its report found that most Australians could rise up the wealth ladder in their lifetime. But the latest research on the difference between the haves and the have-nots claims that the Productivity Commission got it wrong. Patricia Apps is Professor of Public Economics and Research Fellow of the Institute of Labour Economics. She's speaking at today's Revenue Summit put on by the Australia Institute in Canberra. Patricia Apps, welcome to breakfast.
Thank you.
The Productivity Commission found that continuous economic growth has seen living standards for average Australian household improve in every income group, and that unlike some other developed nations, Australia had avoided big increases in income inequality. Do you agree with that?
Well, no, I don't. It depends on the way you look at the data.
Always.
And the simple fact is that top incomes have continued to rise. And what the Productivity Commission has done has used household income as the measure of well-being. But that's seriously problematic, because what it does, to give you an example, is that it ranks a household, say, on $100,000 earned by one partner as being as well off as another household in which both work for twice the hours. And as a consequence, the rankings of households there are very high errors in the ranking in terms of relative living standards.
So tell me more about that. Why is a household with $100,000 check coming in every year compared to two, say, $50,000 checks or two $60,000 checks, why is one better off than the other?
The one that has to only work, say, 40 hours to earn that money is obviously going to be better off, because the second earner, once the children arrive, has the option of either working in the market and buying in substitute services, or working at home and producing them herself, untaxed. She doesn't lose her family payments, and so on. So it makes no sense to say a household where the primary earner is on twice the wage of another household where the primary earner only earns half that wage are equally well off.
So you're saying it shouldn't be an individual measure, it should be a household measure?
No, it should
be the other way around, I beg your pardon.
It should be the other way around. Yes. And the problem is, why it leads to such enormous errors in the ordering of households by living standards is because there's a very high degree of variation in the second earner labour supply. If you take, say, a primary earner at a given income, you will find that what I've done in this paper is split the second earners, I've ranked by primary income, split the second earners into two groups, two subsamples. One in which the second earner earns below median income, and the other in which she earns above. And you get enormous variation in hours. It's something like the average hours by the first those not working fewer hours is in the order of 8, and those working above the median, the average hours is in the order of 36 per week.
So people working longer to get more. But where does this, in the question of is there a growing inequality gap between the haves and the have-nots, is your premise that there is, and what is your proof of that? Because we have had continuous economic growth and a high proportion of people are in work.
Yes, but the problem is just being in work is not enough, okay? Mm-hmm. If, in fact, you're a mother with a young child and you've got to buy in the services that you now no longer produce at home, you should not be ranking on household income. Household income is a very unreliable indicator of how well off a household is. And the reason why you get such huge errors, in the ranking of living standards is because the distribution of primary earnings is relatively flat until you get towards the top percentiles. And then the primary incomes or the primary wage rises very steeply. And so if you use household income, you can, a single earner who starts off at the bottom of the distribution with with a low wage, obviously, if the second partner goes out to work, that household is re-ranked towards the upper half of the distribution. Mm. And if on top of that, second earners are increasing their labour, so in other words, the female participation rate is rising, then that makes it look as though inequality is declining.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. Our guest is Patricia App. She's a professor of public economics and a research fellow at the Institute of Labour Economics. Okay, so where does that go to in terms of that's your thesis around the inequality gap? What about how to deal with these issues and how to have a better share? Because analysis from the ANU Centre for Social Research and Methods found that the wealthiest households cop 61% of Australia's tax burden. The Productivity Commission, again, to quote that, found that Australia's progressive tax system substantially reduces income inequality.
Well, the whole point about redistribution is that you want the top to pay more tax in order to redistribute across the distribution to fund transfer payments or welfare payments. But the point is you don't want to raise those welfare payments by putting high marginal tax across middle or low to middle incomes, which is exactly what successive governments have done, and they've done so incrementally. They've raised marginal tax rates across low and average incomes through really quite non-transparent policy instruments, such as the low income tax offset. And at the same time, they've shifted the upper bracket points and cut the top tax rate.
But the top tax rate in Australia is 45% plus the Medicare levy. That's pretty high, isn't it?
It's lower than it's been in previous years, okay? If you look at the history of reform in Australia, you'll see that the tax rate over the last few decades has actually fallen, and even in the period in which I use the data, it's fallen again, okay? So, but the point is that what we're doing is we're also taxing under a system of joint taxation. We have a system of partial joint taxation. One of the most damaging aspects of our tax system is the fact that second earners, if they go out to work and they've got kids and they're getting family payments, they start to lose those payments. They're withdrawn at 20 and 30% marginal tax rates.
Right.
And therefore what we're effectively doing is taxing as well as, denying mm-hmm. the middle or the low and middle income earners things like the gains from an increase of the zero rated thresholds for the low income
tax. Patricia, I hate to interrupt you, but we're about to hit the news, so I'm sorry about that. But thank you very much for joining us. Patricia Apps is Professor of Public Economics and a Research Fellow at the Institute of Labour Economics.